Greetings and welcome to another episode of Soundography. Soundography is a crash course in music, one band at a time. I'm Brian Ibbett.
And I am Hammond Chamberlain.
And today we are looking at the band Type O Negative, which I can't say that we universally liked.
No, I actually was excited about this week until I got into this week, and then this week kind of haunted me.
Yeah, a little bit. There were aspects of this that I was looking forward to, but you didn't catch my joke there at the beginning, did you?
Which part?
Universally.
Oh, hey, yeah.
Type O Negative is universal donor.
Yeah, very good. Yeah. Oh, wow. That's even bigger than I... Wow, nice work.
Yeah, phlebotomy.
Yeah.
It's the new thing. So this is... this was a rougher week, although I got to say, the further we got into the catalog, the more I liked it. I didn't like those first few albums or first couple albums at all. But by the time we got to Bloody Kisses, things were starting to turn around for me.
Well, I think Bloody Kisses is universally... I did it too. I mean, I'm going to inject humor where I can. I think Bloody Kisses is universally seen as their best album. I don't see how... I don't think there's much debate for that. I think Bloody Kisses is definitely their most widely listened to, universally liked album.
And it's the only album cover that I ever remember seeing. Like it's kind of different. It's, you know, the only one that's not just a dark green hue with some sort of picture on it or some sort of like abstract image on it. It's two women.
Yeah.
You know, who look like they've just been running and they're exhausted. So their mouths are open and they look like they just a really, really vigorous aerobic session, yoga that just finished up or something.
I wonder if a Type O Negative had to get clearance from Chris Carter for the use of the X-Files green on everything they did.
It really is. Yeah. Or Matrix green. I mean, it is really, consistent. And I got to say, I don't think there's any other group that there's certainly no other group that we've looked at. And I can't think of any other group I've seen do this, but their album design, their graphic design is all consistent, right? Type O Negative is in the top right corner. Sometimes the O is in the corner. Sometimes it's the space between the O and the N. Sometimes it's the N. But it's always, you know, a little right angle in the corner, and then the album title in the bottom left corner. And they said, we're going to do this and we're going to stick to it.
Yep. They had that Photoshop template early and they kept it throughout.
And design wise, I hate it because it's something that we were told never to do in graphic design in college is basically create arrows that take people's eyes right off the page. Because subliminally.
Yeah.
The title and the band name create two arrows that just go ring. And if this is at a record store, you're looking at the album either up and to the right or down and to the left.
Which is probably why up until recently, I had never purchased any of their stuff. I kept buying stuff from Styx and stuff from Venom.
Is there a joke I'm missing?
No, because the arrows are pointing in two different directions off the page. So gotcha, I bought stuff from Styx.
Oh, so you're doing an S and
a V. So
yes. All right. Good.
Alphabet jokes.
Yes. Let's get to this. Let's start things off with some information about the band. It was formed by Peter Steele and his friends, Sal Abruscato, Josh Silver, and Kenny Hickey in New York back in 1989. They focused on depression and death as main themes, which gained them the nickname of the Drab Four. That's pretty good, actually. They signed with Roadrunner Records and shortly after released their first album, 1991's Slow, Deep, and Hard.
Which was the inspiration for the South Park first movie's name.
Oh, I was going to say it's How I Fly Fish. this album mixed dirge riffs, hardcore outbursts, and industrial atmospheres.
Unjustifiable existence.
I'm just going to say this right off the bat. There's only one song on this album that I didn't skip halfway through. Only because I know that they're going to be going on to something a lot better after this. But at this point, they sound like a bunch of art school students coming up with concepts for funny song titles, but not having the musical chops to back them up.
I will say that his voice is very similar. I'm not going to say it's exactly the same. I'm not going to say that they could switch roles. I'm going to say it's very similar to Crash Test Dummy Guy.
Just the fact that, right, Brad Roberts and Peter Steele both have a very low bass voice. I can see that. I mean, that's really where the yes, comparison ends.
I was going to say, but it sounds like Crash Test Dummy Guy actually takes his antidepressants.
I think so. At least, I know that he did at least once. Anyway, do you want to know which song I didn't skip on this first album,
please
by
tell
the
me.
Way?
Yes, please tell me.
Track 6, which is 1:04 long and is called The Misinterpretation of Silence and Its Disastrous Consequences. And, oh, aren't they clever? They basically put a 1 minute of silence track in the middle of their album.
They're really making us, they're deep. Comprehend. Just, we can't comprehend how deep they are.
Right, right. I mean, there are other titles. Unsuccessfully Coping with the Natural Beauty of Infidelity, a 12-minute song.
Yeah, that actually sounds like it would be some kind of wacky oil painting hanging in some art.
Right.
Yeah, you're dead right about the titles and the...
Yeah, art. And another one called Gravitational Constant, Constant G equals 6.67 times 10 minus 8 centimeters minus 3 GM minus 1. Yeah, I mean, it's like... Okay, guys. I also can't tell what the heck I'm looking at with that album cover. And do I even want to know what I'm looking at with that album cover? According to the Typo Negative Wiki, yes, that's a thing. In keeping with the band's notable humor, the cover of Slow, Deep, and Hard is a blurry picture of a penis penetrating a vagina. Yep, okay, now I know what it is. All right. And we're on some sort of list now, I'm sure of it. All right, well, there you go. The long songs were epic surrounding a man planning revenge on an unfaithful girlfriend, but instead commits suicide.
Just like that Wiggles album.
You beat me to it by a second. I really was about to say that.
That's a joke specifically for my 11-year-old daughter.
1992, they followed it up with The Origin of the Feces. This album had a sticker on it that read, "Not Live at Brighton Beach." The album contained fake live recordings of the songs from their debut album, along with Are You Afraid and Hey Pete, which is kind of a... Oh, yeah, I guess you're about to say that. They also covered Black Sabbath's Paranoid. Tell me about Hey Pete.
Hey Pete is a musical cover, but lyrically changed cover of Jimi Hendrix's Hey Joe. So they took the music and rearranged it to be Hey Pete.
That's right. And Hendrix's version is also a cover of a band called The Leaves. Mm-hmm. They were the first band to do Hey Joe.
I know The Origin of the Feces is usually a rough taco meal.
Jeez. It's just going to be dad jokes nonstop.
No, I'm sorry. I got to lighten the mood of this band.
Okay. Yeah, it is. It's heavy and dark. And it's funny that the wiki talks about the band's humor.
This is like Danzig without the jokes.
It's a less funny Danzig. Okay, now that was really funny. 1993, they released the album Bloody Kisses, which we talked about earlier. This one was released to Universal acclaim. It was the first record from Roadrunner to gain platinum success. The album's themes address, again, heartbreak and loneliness, and it featured songs like Can't Lose You and Set Me on Fire. They also covered Summer Breeze by Seals and Crofts. And Christian Woman and Black Number One were the most popular tracks from the album, and they were edited to be played on radio.
Black Number One was one of those songs I would hear on the radio. Like, I was working graveyards at the jail. Mm-hmm. And right around 6 o'clock, I'd be in my office and Black Number One would come on. And I would hear it. And I'm like, wow, that's actually a pretty good song. And it took me forever because the internet was still way in its infancy.
There's no Shazam. Uh-huh.
And there was no way to kind of figure out what that was. So I called the radio station. Oh, and then they said, oh, that's Typo Negative. And then he hung up on me. Like, you didn't help me with the title, stupid.
So he answered and then hung up. Yeah. All right, nice.
So at least it got me in the right direction. And then I went to the record store. I went to Media Play and mm-hmm. waited to find some person who looked like they'd probably know what they're talking about, which was rare at Media Play.
I miss Media Play.
It was hard though, because at ours, there was like one person who really knew what was going on in the music section. The rest of them were just not knowing what they were talking about. Mm-hmm. And I found the one guy and he's like, oh yeah, that's this one. And he handed it to me and I bought that album because of the radio playing Black Number One. And I mean, I was expecting all of that through this week. And I got that song.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, there you go. A year after the release of this album, a limited digipack was released that included 8 original tracks and the unreleased Suspended in Dust. In 1996, they released October Rust. This album explored themes of nature, sex, and sensuality. My Girlfriend's Girlfriend is a lighter take than expected, but gets darker with Love You to Death. And a cover of Neil Young's Cinnamon Girl was on this album. In 1999, they released World Coming Down. This one debuted at number 39 on the album charts. This was a much darker album than October Rust, with a bleak outlook on the world.
Okay, let's put that in context.
Yeah, all of these things are relative, right? Yeah. It's different shades of black is what we're looking at here.
And not to make light, but this album was written after Peter suffered some deaths in his family. So he was dealing with some stuff. So therefore, the bleak outlook would be understandable.
Yeah.
However, based upon 3 or 4 albums prior bleakness, mm-hmm. saying that this was the bleak album really is saying something.
Yeah, I didn't pick this album out as bleaker than any of the rest, but you know, I believe it, especially based on the influence, Peter Steele's influence on this. In 2000, they released the least worst of Typo Negative. So they're even clever with their Greatest Hits album. Most of the songs were not new, but there were remixes on the album. There were some B-sides included as well. A cover of Black Sabbath's self-titled song was added to the song list for this one.
Black Sabbath, it featured a different way of couching the lyrics. So they were from the perspective of Satan and not the other way around, like Ozzy's Black Sabbath did.
Like the original version. Yeah. Gotcha. Makes sense. 2003, Life is Killing Me came out. Although the band's main elements were there, the songs were much shorter on this album. And this one contains a cover of Angry Inch from Hedwig and the Angry Inch. That one really threw me for a loop. And we'll talk about that in a little bit. In 2006, they released another best of album. This one just called Best of Typo Negative. And in 2007, they released Dead Again. This one debuted at number 27.
And to be really honest with you, it was relatively unremarkable.
It was, yeah. Did I pick anything from that album? I didn't. No, none of my picks came from that album. In 2010, we lost Peter Steele. Lead vocalist died of heart failure. It was reported that the band had broken up following his death. In 2011, they released the album None More Negative, kind of a play on the Spinal Tap None More Black album or line from the movie. And in 2012, the complete Roadrunner collection, which was a box set of all of their albums, with the exception of Dead Again. Hammond, tell me about some statistics and general notes about Type O Negative.
All right. So they appeared on a ton of soundtracks. They were on Mortal Kombat, Bride of Chucky, Love of the Damned, Freddy vs. Jason, I Know What You Did Last Summer, Private Parts, and Blair Witch Project 2, which is the more normal of the Blair Witch Project movies, but it's also the worst.
The most normal? Oh, so it's just like a regular...
Yeah,
it's so not it's... found footage kind of thing?
Yeah, it's a regular shot film, and they're playing on the first movie, but they're being super meta about it. It's kind of messy, but it had a really good soundtrack.
Oh, so like Scream, where it's almost a parody of the original?
A parody. It's weird how it leans into the mythology of the first film. Mm-hmm. But then it's people, it's really super confusing.
Sounds hard to describe.
Yeah, it's not that it's a horrible movie. It's just it's a bad Blair Witch movie.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, fair enough.
Arrow Video made their own versions of Nosferatu using nothing but Type O Negative tracks. And they,
Okay.
And then they made an appeared on a bunch of video game soundtracks. And they also did a fair amount of covers. They opened their 1999 tour with a cover of In the Flesh by Pink Floyd.
Oh, see, that's a cool one.
Yeah.
I wish they would have put that on one of their studio albums. That would have been cool to hear.
Especially with his voice. That would have been really good.
Yeah. Actually, no kidding. All right. Well, let's see what we would definitely hear if we were to see them in concert. These are their Stairway to Heaven songs, the songs that they're guaranteed or they would have been guaranteed to play. Were they still touring, performing? They did their last tour, by the way. Their last performance was on Halloween 2009. That's crazy.
Wow.
What are their songs that we should see on this list?
Okay, so I'm not super familiar with their live stuff or whatever. I just kind of went for the songs that I liked and that I knew. And so Love You to Death, My Girlfriend's Girlfriend, and my pick for the Stairway to Heaven song, the one you're going to definitely hear, is Block Number One.
Absolutely right. Black Number One is number one. 275 performances in concert, followed by Christian Woman, Love You to Death, Prelude to Agony, Kill All the White People, Too Late, Frozen, Gravitational Constant, blah, 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 My Girlfriend's Girlfriend, and Wolf Moon rounding out the top 10. Actually, Cinnamon Girl rounding out the top 10. So even Summer Breeze, I thought Summer Breeze actually might be higher on the list because that was... not just on one of their own albums, but also included on a couple soundtracks.
Yep. Well, that was actually on one of the, I think that was the one that was on Blair Witch.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah, I think that actually might be the reason why I bought the Blair Witch 2 soundtrack was because that's that song.
Just for that specific track. Interesting. Well, there you go. So speaking of covers, what would we like to hear them cover? It's a regular feature on Soundography where we ask that very question, what we would like to hear that band cover if they were still doing covers, if they were still performing. Mine is an out there one, but based on their relationship, you know, bad relationship songs, Hey Ya, which a lot of people don't realize is a sad relationship song about breakups, even though the song is peppy and upbeat. It's really got some sad lyrics to it. Plus, I really want to hear Peter Steele's deep voice singing Shake It Like a Polaroid Picture. That would have been great. So, Hey Ya by Outkast. They've got, you know, that fits in their sense of humor and their wheelhouse for that. So,
yeah, especially based on that first album cover. They're just laugh. They're comedians.
They're a riot. That's right. They're a riot.
Yeah. I picked something that, I mean, they pick Summer Breeze. They do Cinnamon Girl. You know, they've done In the Flesh. So I mm-hmm. went with Incense and Peppermints by Strawberry Alarm Clock. I think it seems like a no-brainer.
Yeah, that seems like it would be a good one. It was, I believe, if I remember correctly, that was the number one hit when I was born.
Oh, cool.
August 1969, I believe.
It has always been one of my favorite songs.
It's a really cool chord progression, right? Mm-hmm.
And especially that part where it drops down, da, 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 and it draws down before they go into mm-hmm. the chorus, the pre-chorus.
Back into the chorus, yeah. Yeah. Yep, good choice. All right, well, let's get to our set list. Boy, we're flying through with a band with five albums or six studio albums. It goes pretty quickly.
Yeah, and but, also the less amount of time we spend kind of dabbling in depressive places, the less likely we are to be depressive ourselves. So
sure,
I'm gonna go listen to a whole bunch of like upbeat Motley Crue when I'm done here.
I've got the Wiggles queued up and ready to run. So this is where we have five songs that we really enjoyed, usually not pulling from their greatest hits album, although I didn't take a look and I'm pretty sure at least one of these is on their greatest hits.
I'm pretty sure one of mine might be too.
Yeah. So we're going to start off with, yep, it's a Christian Woman.
On your back on knees. No forgiveness for her.
Second most popular song they play in concert. This was the first thing that I heard that I really liked. You know, we got to that third album, and said, oh, okay, now this is good. This is what I was kind of hoping for. And really liked the chord progression, a really dark chord progression, but still a really cool song, Christian Woman from Bloody Kisses. Next one I've got is Everything Dies. This is from World Coming Down album. Strangely haunting, but still melodic as part of that. And yeah, the lyrics are depressing like most of their stuff, but I still really dug it. A dish best served coldly from the album Life Is Killing Me. One of two from the last album of theirs that I really enjoyed. This one has a nice build. You know, it comes in kind of lower beat and then really picks up by the end. And I kind of like that a lot. Angry Inch, the Hedwig and the Angry Inch song, the cover. Also from Life Is Killing Me. This is one that I loved simply because I wasn't expecting it, right? I knew about Cinnamon Girl. I knew about Summer Breeze. Got to this one and thought, oh my God, they're covering Hedwig and the Angry Inch? It's not only do you very rarely hear anybody cover anything from that album, except for one whole tribute album that people put out for that. just hearing these guys cover that seemed unusual. So that made me enjoy it even more. And my fifth one, yep, gotta choose it. It's Summer Breeze, their cover of Seals and Crofts from the Bloody Kisses album. It's a really good cover. It's not just the fact that it's a cover in the midst of a lot of originals. It's the fact that like or hate their style, they did what they were supposed to do with this cover and completely rebuilt it using their own paintbrushes. So,
and also you got to admit that the juxtaposition, the mental dichotomy that you have to live in to sing a song about Sweet Days of Summer. And have it sound like you're walking corpses down to a cemetery. that in itself makes it worth talking about, just because the mental aerobics that you have to go through to listen to it, let alone arrange it and play it, means that they kind of know what they were doing at one point in their career. Sure.
Yep, for sure. Yeah, no argument there.
Before we jump into my list, I just want to say, I got to give these guys credit too for bringing the harpsichord into popular music.
Yeah, you don't hear enough harpsichord, right?
Yeah, heavy metal harpsichord. That just doesn't happen very often. So
no,
good on these guys for bringing it into back to the zeitgeist.
For sure.
I also wanted to bring up the fact that if they were still doing music, I'd want them to score the Addams Family musical.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that would be, would that darken the mood of the thing though? Because it's one thing to be dark with a very, very dry sense of humor. Another thing to be comedic, dark and comedic.
Yeah.
And I think these guys are the former.
I'm wondering if then they could contribute songs to it, because I think that they could have contributed songs to it, because I think that they have that. I mean, hearing them do their creepy and their kooky part would have been really good.
Yeah, it would have. Yeah. I mean, really, this thing hinges so much on Peter Steele's vocals.
Yeah,
I
don't think,
were they to get back together, I don't think that they'd have what I liked about them, which is the combination of those dark melodies and tracks and lyrics with his vocals.
Yeah.
I think the two play off each other really well.
And I know we've made fun about how grim and dark they are, but they are. And what really highlighted in my list, which I'll get to, is that there are moments when they break out of that. And when they do, it feels like bright rays of sunshine through storm clouds.
And really, to be honest, it's the fact that they found their shtick and they stuck to it, right? I mean, this is they're not playing this role. They're actually performing it. And I gotta say, I do really like that. And I admire that.
Yeah. All right. So my list is my start with How Could She from Life is Killing Me. There's a lightness in the chorus, and I like the why parts that break up the sad guy singing low stuff. There was enough layers and diversity in his vocal performance to really make this interesting to listen to.
Yeah.
Then I picked Zero Tolerance from Slow, Deep, and Hard. It starts out almost upbeat. It has a snap to it that the others kind of don't. And again, when those moments of, I don't want to say perkiness, but moments of smile come through, you hang on to them because you know it's going to turn back down a dark hallway soon.
Yeah.
With lots of harpsichord as accompaniment.
Play me down the hall.
The next one I picked is a cover of sorts. It's Day Tripper from World Coming Down. Day Tripper! It is too weird and too type O not to put on this list. It also shows glimmers of different vocal ranges and different moods, but they covered Day Tripper. And I'll be honest, this one took me by surprise.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting it either. And it's a medley, isn't it?
Yes, it is a medley. It is.
Yeah, yeah. Cool. Yeah, it surprised me too.
But it starts out with him yelling, Day Tripper. Right.
No, them? Wow.
Then I pick Nettie from Life is Killing Me. I wish they'd done more of these kinds of songs. There is a wide variety between one part of the song and the next part of the song. And I wish they showed that variety and diversity a lot more. This one really stood out because of that, though. Mm-hmm. And then when you do a song like Wolf Moon on the album October Rust, you got to make sure that Universal uses this song when they do the next werewolf movie for the Dark Saga universe.
It would be appropriate, yeah.
It would help the dark universe finally find its legs, and I have a feeling that it would bring the song back to the forefront, which I think would be good. It's a good song.
I heard they scrapped that whole idea, which really bummed me out, the dark universe, the Universal Dark Universe, because it had a really good, it was such a good premise, right? It would be like all of your favorite Universal monsters redone, new actors, new stories, and they could... you know, join them up. And it's like, oh,
kind of like Penny Dreadful. Kind of like Penny Dreadful did. Yes,
very much like Penny Dreadful, for sure.
But yeah, I think they could still make a run at it with different creative team, maybe. I don't know. But Hammer also had a whole bunch of monsters running around the same each other's movies, so.
Yeah. It could be like Monster Squad. You never know.
So anyway, that's my list. And, I look back at the week and yes, there are moments when it really was just sad guys singing low music. Mm-hmm. However, mm-hmm. to experience the entire catalog kind of in one fell swoop did give me an appreciation for their talent and for their style. And I did pull four or five songs that I'm going to keep on my phone to listen to. So I did come away with something new, positive, and appreciative of them. So
yeah, I think that's accurate. I think I could say the same, is that I now know more about them than I did. And I now know that if I do want to listen to them, I know which album range I want to stay in.
Yeah.
And, and you know, there's something to that. So I enjoyed it, but I'm glad that week is over because there's nothing but blue skies ahead and nothing but just stuff to look forward to. By the way, Hammond, what's our next band that we're going to be listening to?
Don't hit me. It's Toby Keith. This is what I'm glad that we're a full state away from each other, because I think you would have punched me.
Exactly. Yeah. All right. Well, you know, I love this bar and grill. That's my one of my five picks next week is going to be his bar in Las Vegas. As one of my set list songs.
We'll all grab our red solo cups and sit down there with...
Oh, God, that's right, yeah. That song.
Beer for My Horses?
Beer for My Horses.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Boy.
All right, let's just get through this week. Let's just get through this weekend. That is going to do it for this edition of Soundography. If you want to get in touch with us, email soundographypodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter. We are at The Soundography there. We say lots of things, and we love to hear back from you on the things you say about the things we say and the things we listen to. For everything else, visit soundography.com. It is all of your previous episodes of the show. You can search for certain bands if you've missed certain episodes. And for every episode, you'll find our show notes, which contain links to listen to the songs on Spotify. You'll find links to buy music from Amazon. Clearly, I'll be linking to Bloody Kisses for this one. You'll also find a way to support the show by going to Patreon, patreon.com/soundography. Not only do you get some amazing outtakes and clips that don't make it onto the show, and if you aren't a patron, there's a great one that you're missing out on that we took out of this show, all about the album cover, the first album cover by Typo Negative. And you also get extra bonus shows where about once a month or so we watch a movie that is music related and talk about it. And so that's also right here on the Patreon. If you love the show, leave a review. It helps people find out that you like the show and maybe they'll check it out for themselves. And you can leave those reviews anywhere you get your podcasts. Hammond, are we ready to wrap up for Typo Negative?
I think so. However, I do want to make a promise to you and the people who listen to the show that next week is not the last show of Soundography. Even though after Toby Keith, you might want it to be.
No, because I'm seeing the light at the end of the tunnel after Toby. So don't you worry. My eyes are on the carrot dangling from the stick that's just beyond those cowboy boots and plastic cups of
you
Toby
mean
Keith.
Hair metal week?
Right before that.
Yeah, I know. I'm just kidding.
I know you are. All right. That is going to do it for Soundography. Thanks for listening. On behalf of Hammond Chamberlain, this is Brandon Bitt saying thanks for listening. We'll see you next time right here on Soundography.
Show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.